The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Again.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in the plain.
I think she's got it. I think she's got it.
The rain in Spain stays mainly in
Audrey
the plain.
Audrey Hepburn with Rex Harrison in My Fair Lady. At the very moment when her character Eliza Doolittle understands that she can make an impeccable, if rather mannered, impression. Hello, this is Best Practice. I'm Richard Adie. Eve Poole wholeheartedly agrees with this approach. Not pretending to be something you're not, more that manners, how you treat people and what you say, matter a lot. The author and leadership expert went to finishing school herself. But why does she think manners matter in the workplace?
Manners are just a really important part of the workplace because they're really about how you ease situations between people. So it's about reducing the friction between people in the workplace. And manners are really about just making other people feel comfortable. And if you can do that, you can get the best out of them.
And is that part of the same thing as grooming? Because I read a recent piece on you in the Financial Times, and it's the first observation about you is how well groomed you are.
I think sometimes being well-groomed is also an act of manners because you're making other people feel comfortable. I think being overly well-groomed would probably just freak everyone else out. So there is definitely a balance to be struck there. But I think the whole point about these social niceties is they've been developed over centuries, really, to try and ease social interaction. So excellent manners tend to all be about not trying to trip people up with strange rules, but about making people around you feel comfortable.
I read a study years ago which connects into this. It's at the other end of the scale. But as you progress from the US's northern border with Canada to its south, you encounter much higher levels of gun ownership, and people become more elaborately courteous as you move down from north to south. I think that makes complete sense.
I think that's absolutely right. I think you also find that with the sort of social echelons as well. I think there's a reason that quotes posh people have always been considered to be the people who take manners terribly seriously. Because I think if you're in an environment where status is really important and the niceties of that, I mean, you've talked about gun ownership and making sure that doesn't go wrong. If you're talking about states and nations and trying not to accidentally declare war on each other, there's something quite important about how you observe the sorts of rules that will help people feel comfortable so there can't be any misunderstandings.
Now, you went to a finishing school.
I did.
I think you're the first person I've ever spoken to, in my knowledge, who went to a finishing school.
Well, it's a bit of a cheat, really. It's Lucy Clayton Charm School in Kensington. And by the time I went, finishing schools were sort of rather dated. So it was more of a finishing course than a finishing school, which I did in the summer after my MBA, because my aunt very sensibly pointed out that it's all very well going on these courses that teach you how to think excellently. But business is also about behaving well, too. And finishing school can really help you with that.
Right. Did that kind of polish off your manners or teach you about etiquette, even deportment?
Well, it was what was really interesting about it, it was a really great sort of manners MOT. So you started with some basics around standing and walking and up and down stairs and in and out of cars and all those sort of stereotypical things. But it also covered diet and exercise and, makeup and presentation and your colours and psychology and coaching and presentation skills and a whole range of things which are just all about how do you come across well in public situations. So life skills, really.
So how important are they, along with manners, when it comes to leadership?
If you think what leadership is, you aren't leading if you don't have followers. And for me, followers these days can choose whether or not they want to be led by you. And it's unlikely they're going to really want to follow people that make them feel fundamentally uncomfortable and unwanted. So for me, it's a really crucial part of a leadership skill set is to have good manners so that you can charm people into wanting to follow you.
And yet we see, especially in the political realm, the emergence of leaders like Mr. Trump in America, who doesn't seem to do manners.
And it's fascinating. So many of my American friends are feeling really ashamed of the leader they have because his manners are absolutely atrocious. The way he treats his wife. Recently, there's been a picture of him shoving another leader out of the way at a NATO summit. It's just not the way to treat people because what it does is it tells everybody else in the world that you are more important than they are. Now, even if that is the case, it's particularly important that you don't make that your brand because it puts everyone else's backs up and it does not help.
Yes, well, we can see that that is in fact happening. Now, you talk about something called leader smithing. What's leader smithing?
So leader smithing is my way of capturing what I think leaders really think they are doing. I don't think leadership is one of these things that sort of arrives on a certificate after a course. I think it is the day-to-day craft of leading and trying to make sense of the world around you, trying not to be found out, trying just to guess what might be necessary next because there is so little certainty in leadership. So leadership sounds terribly final and cerebral when actually real leading is messy and temporary and provisional, and improvisation is more important than anything else. So leadersmithing is all about taking seriously the craft of leading and how you can achieve mastery in that.
For a woman with an MBA, that's kind of fighting talk to the business schools.
It is. I'm not sure they'll be very pleased with me. I've written this book really rather like a car manual because I think leadership has been far too exclusive and we need better quality leaders across the entire world in all sorts of areas at the moment. Far too importantly to let this be something that you can only do if you've got thousands of pounds or dollars to spend at a business school. So for me, this is about fundamentally democratizing leadership by making it accessible to everybody who wants to aspire to those kinds of roles.
It does make it accessible, but it also underlines how difficult it is, because the thing about a craft is that there are no craftsmen who become craftsmen by doing a course that takes a year or even 2 years. It takes a lot more than that.
I think that's right. And the lovely thing about the metaphor of smithing and craft is this idea of apprentice pieces. So for hundreds of years, the only way you got a job in the workplace, in trade, in industry, was by serving an apprenticeship. And the only way you migrated from being an apprentice to being a master or even having your own business was to do apprentice pieces to show your peers that you were job ready. And that involved you making something in miniature. I have a beautiful miniature marble font, which was something that was produced in Cornwall in Britain to show at the end of an apprenticeship there that you were fit to be trusted with huge volumes of marble and really intricate designs. And I love this idea of doing something perfectly in miniature to show that you're ready to scale up. So a lot of my leadersmithing approach is about trying to identify small craft practices that you can indulge in week by week, and you can scale those up to be a better leader and to achieve mastery.
Give me an example.
So with manners, I've separated these out as a sort of pack of cards. So there's 52 practices for every week of the year, and they're in suits, and my hearts are all about manners. The first one, the Ace of Hearts, is all about charm, and how do you practice charm? How do you get better at that? And that is just putting your phone down, smiling at people at the bus stop, saying thank you when people open the door, passing the time of day, talking about the weather, all these things which can be easily deprioritized because we're all so busy and in such a rush. But actually, if you end up being charming to people on the phone and charming to people driving around, charming to people you meet, it just becomes a muscle that is better flexed and exercised for you to use more naturally in all kinds of situations.
That's interesting, because we are told again and again, and especially on this program, I interview people all the time who are talking about the data. It's all about the data and about the analytics. But this is about people skills.
It is about people skills. And again, I think what they say when they talk about emotional intelligence and leadership research is that the data, the IQ, that's the stuff that gets you in the door to get a job. But if you want to get up the stairs to be senior, all the really great leaders have mastered all that detail years ago. And now the thing that is differentiating is their people skills, because you're only as good as the performance you can get out of those people around you.
How does leadersmithing deal with fear? Because you've said that most leadership happens when things go horribly wrong. Now, when things go horribly wrong, most of us are a bit scared.
Well, this is really why I wrote leadersmithing, because I'm fed up of being scared and people around me being too scared to do the right things. So my approach, the leadersmithing approach, is about templating. It's figuring out, what is all the things you fear and how do you just diary them in now, get them out of the way? So if you are terrified of public speaking, how can you start addressing a team meeting? How can you start doing videos for Facebook? How can you start doing local radio? Stuff that the baby steps, the little apprentice pieces that will make you feel braver so that you can just stop being scared.
You picked up a bunch of fights with a succession of chaps.
So one of my fears from when I was very young was about making men around me cross, because I was brought up in the east coast of Fife in Scotland to be a very nice, well brought up little girl who would never upset particularly a chap. And when I realised this was holding me back from just naming problems in meetings or having my views heard, I decided that what I had to do was to develop some templates and just trying to deal with that sort of conflict. So I had a year of my picking fights with chaps experiments, which was just in meetings when a bloke said something that was clearly fatuous, rather than just sitting there and kind of going, like a lot of girls do, I would write it down, or I'd say, excuse me, could you repeat that? Or I would eventually work up to say things like, I'm not sure I agree with you. And actually over time, I have found it much easier to defend myself, to give people feedback, and also to name things when I don't agree with them. And that's just about practice.
Right. And was it really a progression from writing things down to can you repeat it to you're talking a load of cobblers?
Well, that's the thing. I think you do have to build up slowly to test your own resilience. You can absolutely, neurobiologically speaking, throw yourself in at the deep end and just pick the fight, because then you'll have an extremely clear template in your head. Even if you fail, you'll have some resources for the future. But for most of us, I think that it is about trying to test our own boundaries and our own sense of what we can risk. And for me, it was about building that up gradually. But, you know, for other people, actually just programming an actor for the day to come in and shout at you, that will teach you everything you need to know about coping under pressure.
Yeah, not what I would choose, though. I'm interested in your approach, because what it does is it acknowledges that we can train our brains, we can change our brains, and we can do it in a way that kind of gets us, well, doesn't get us those years of experience that we used to need to master things, but kind of points us in that direction.
Well, this is what I love about this idea of templating in the brain, because it's taking really seriously the idea of the sort of 10,000 hours hypothesis, which is that you can learn anything if you can give it 10,000 hours. But it also takes seriously the fact that leaders have no time. They don't have 10,000 hours to practice something. So if you can understand the way that filing cabinets of your brain work and you understand the role of emotion, then what you can do is short circuit that 10,000 hours by doing some really big learns by acquiring them under pressure.
All right. Well, earlier we were talking about President Trump. I want to ask about the leaders who you've seen at the opposite end of the scale, the leaders that we know of, but you can see have the manners.
Well, I think the archetype for this is always our queen, because when you see in a kind of caricatured way, really, the epitome of a manners approach to life, it teaches you what might be the right thing to do and what might not be the right thing to do. Because the queen takes rules around manners, but she also breaks rules around manners. So you will remember many years ago in your papers when Paul Keating was seen to apparently shove the Queen around and was then dubbed the Lizard of Oz. But on the other hand, we have the famous Michelle Obama hug with the Queen, which is the Queen realizing in that context that making Michelle Obama feel comfortable would be to reciprocate that sort of physical gesture. So for me, I think it's a bit like going right back to basics. You know, Sleeping Beauty, when we were all children and hearing stories, was about the perils of being so rude as to not invite the wicked fairy to your party. On the other hand, The Princess and the Pea is about deliberately being rude by putting a pea in someone's bed, and the princess also being equally rude complaining about it. So you can see that there isn't an absolute rule about manners. It is all about what is appropriate for the situation that you're in. So what I notice about leaders who get this right is that they have a set of rules they can deploy as appropriate, and they use them or not as the circumstances dictate.
It's been really interesting talking to you today. Thank you very much for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Eve Poole is the author of Leader Smithing. You'll find details on the Best Practice homepage at abc.net.au/rn.